Derek here, along with Romaine, and joining us now by phone, it's author Marcy Smothers. She's a food explorer, and her book, which is available now on Amazon and everywhere fine books are sold, is Eat Like Walt, The Wonderful World of Disney Food. You can follow her on Twitter. She is Food Wine Marcy on Twitter and on Instagram, Food Wine and Marcy. And the website for the book is eatlikewalt.com. Welcome to the show.
Well, hey, Derek and Romaine, that may be some of the most fun play on music I've ever had.
Well,
all right. We like that. I was trying to find an appropriate parody song because most of our songs are really naughty.
Yeah, they're wildly inappropriate.
But this one had food and it was a not bad one. So I was like, I could play that one.
Yes.
I appreciate that. As we are going to talk about Walt Disney, that's probably appropriate.
That's what I think.
Probably.
Now,
yes.
Both Derek and I are huge Disney fans. We go as many times as we can. And both Derek and I also love food at Disney. So we thought this is a perfect thing to talk about.
Well, let's start. So you guys Walt Disney World people primarily?
Well, I prefer Disneyland, actually.
And I grew up with Disneyland. I have been to four of, I don't know how many parks there are now, five or six. But I went to the four oldest parks around the world. I haven't been to Hong Kong or Shanghai, but I've been to Japan and Paris and, of course, Orlando and Disneyland many, many times.
Well, I'm happy to hear you're Disneyland people because I'm a Disneyland person. I mean, and I don't hold any grudges, real grudges, against people that prefer Walt Disney World. But, of course, Disneyland is the only park that Walt ever set foot in. I mean, he walked the property for Walt Disney World, but, you know, it was obviously built long after he passed away.
Yeah. Well, all right. So there are big differences in these parks, especially when it comes to food. And I want to start by talking about one of my favorite items in a Disney park that is not really available in Florida. And I find it surprising. And yet I heard there's a very specific reason. And that is churros. I'm a Disneyland churro fan. I get them pretty much after every ride.
What? After every ride?
Yeah. I go and ride a ride.
How many churros
and I
are
eat
you
a churro.
Eating?
And then I go and I wait in a long line. Ride the ride,
oh,
and then I eat a churro.
Wow, that's impressive.
Thank you. This
is not recommended by the American Heart Association,
No, it's
by
bad.
The way.
It's a bad idea.
Right, right. Well, yeah, churros are evolving. Well, first of all, fun fact, soon to be gone fun fact, is there's only the best selling churros is actually over at Disney's California Adventure, and you can find it because it's in Bugs Land under the only four-leaf clover in Bugs Land. So if you want to find the only four-leaf clover, find the churro. And you're going to be a happy girl. But are you guys following Pixar Fest at Disneyland to see all, like, the carrot cake churro with cream cheese frosting or the lemon churros, all
can
these crazy
Can I be
flavors?
Honest? I think these crazy flavored churros are just an abomination.
Okay, we are now so bonding so fast, Romaine. This is excellent. I agree. First of all, I am a purist in every way. I can tell you guys. Are you guys corn dog fans?
I love a corn dog, yes.
Okay, here's the thing. So, when Walt opened Disneyland in 1955, none of, as he called them, the feeding operations were run by Walt Disney or the company. They were all leased out. So what is now the Plaza Inn was Swift's Red Wagon Inn. And so Walt actually took that restaurant back in 1965. However, the little Red Wagon, see next to the Plaza Inn now, is an homage to the icon from Swift's Red Wagon. Now, here's the deal. I used to give people, like, my big tip. Don't wait in line. That long line on Main Street USA. Go to Stage Door Cafe. Get a corn dog there. And by the way, fun fact too, there is a secret menu item there, and that is fried mozzarella sticks with marinara still exists, okay? But here's the big secret. You don't really want to get your corn dog at the Stage Door to save time because the Stage Door fries their corn dogs in the same oil that does the fish and the chicken nuggets and the fries and the mozzarella sticks. Mm. The oil where they fry the corn dogs at their little Red Wagon is designated corn dog oil. Therefore, the superior corn dog is there.
Right.
End of subject.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's worth it to me to wait in line for the wagon. That's my go-to food at the park. I mean, if I had to pick one thing, that's my thing. I like the corn dog.
Really?
Yeah.
Good. I have to peel the corn part off. It's so rich.
It's always too much. It's too much of the breading to the dog. It's too much.
I disagree.
Well, I agree with the ratio, Romaine, but you're a 12 churro in a day woman, and you're saying there's too much breading.
Exactly.
Now, you be quiet now. Now, that's just great. I will say, though, I do love the Plaza for their fried chicken.
Me too.
Awesome.
Me too.
And I love during, like, the Pride time of year when they do their rainbow Mickey Mouse cake. It's
I know.
Amazing.
Do you know who would be a great guest for you guys? Because he's the biggest LGBTQI advocate at Disneyland is Falkenberg. And he runs gay and lesbian days at Disneyland. He does all the rainbow pride. And he's like the ambassador to the Plaza Inn restaurant.
Well,
he knows more. He knows a ton about Disneyland. He's a great guy. So big shout out for Steve.
Awesome. Okay. Now, okay. So I have so many questions about Disney food. I really do because I love Disney food. And so... I always have lots of questions. Here's the thing I would like to know, and maybe you have the answer for this, because I have been advocating for this for probably 6 or 7 years now, I would say. Derek probably can attest to this. So every year at Disneyland, they do the Nightmare Before Christmas at the Haunted Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And in that overlay that they do, they have a scene where there's a gingerbread house. Every year, they create a new gingerbread house. You go through that scene, and you know, in the ballroom, and it smells like gingerbread. I want to know why they haven't come out with a gingerbread cookie at one of those little stands when you get off that ride so you can enjoy the gingerbread you just smelled. I would eat that every freaking time. Every time. And I don't know why they don't do it.
Well, first of all, that is a great idea. And I have a lot of ideas, too. I call it in the category for 1,000, Alex, if I was the boss of Disneyland. That makes perfect sense, and that's a great idea. And I actually, I mean, it's hard. I don't know how they make the decision about food. I'm really not, because I'm a Disneyland historian that specializes in Walt Disney's era. So although I went to Disneyland 80 days in like 18 months while I was writing this book, because I wrote my book a lot at Disneyland. So a lot of those, the food is really becoming a big deal there, but I don't know how, I would love to know how they make the selections, like for the Pixar Fest or for the seasonal foods that come out, because they are getting very innovative, and I'm very impressed. And also, secret menu items are everywhere now, and it's really fun, like at the Riverbell Terrace that's now been remodeled, which was Aunt Jemima's Pancake House when the Disneyland opened. They now have the barbecued brisket tater tot secret menu item.
That sounds really good.
That sounds yummy.
It is. It's nice. It's tater tots with a lot of pulled barbecue brisket over it and some peas and some green onion, and it's nice. So I don't know how to get your gingerbread cookie, but I will work on it.
Yeah, I mean, because listen, I feel like they've done some really brilliant things. Like going back to the churro, I love the idea of making the colored sugar to make it look like lightsabers. Whoever came up with that idea is a genius.
Because they didn't have to change anything other than the sugar.
They didn't have to change the recipe. Yeah. All they did was change the color of the sugar, which was brilliant.
Do you like the chocolate-covered churros by the fairies?
No.
By the princesses, excuse me?
No. I am a straight-up, hardcore, regular, original recipe churro fan.
But you do accept colored sugars.
I will accept the colored sugars.
Because it doesn't change the flavor.
It doesn't change the flavor. I want
the flavor,
my cinnamon sugar churro.
Now, of my sit-down restaurants, my favorite is the French Market.
Really?
Yes, because I like the location. I like
the location
sitting
nice.
Outside. They have the band play.
Yeah,
the beignets are right there.
The beignet line is always so long.
I know. It used to be people didn't know it was there, and it wasn't that bad, and now it's horrendous.
It's
But I enjoy that for the atmosphere. I think it has for the sort of buffet style seat yourself kind of thing at Disneyland. I think it has the best atmosphere.
I agree with you on atmosphere points are very high. I love New Orleans Square, period. You know, and you know, there. Here's a fun fact. New Orleans Square is the only land which Walt was alive to open New Orleans Square in 1966. But he, of course, did not live to see the three restaurants he championed open, which would be the Blue Bayou, Club 33, and the Creole Cafe. But going back to the fun fact, it's the only land at Disneyland that ever opened without a running attraction.
Because
Pirates was not ready, being the premier attraction. Of course, Haunted Mansion, which Walt was very involved in, wasn't, you know, open until well after Walt passed away at the end of the 60s. And even though the Blue Bayou restaurant was ready to go, Walt said he didn't want any guests in there because it wouldn't be a good show without the boats floating by. So that's why the Blue Bayou didn't open and waited till 67 till the whole package came together.
Now, I haven't eaten in the Blue Bayou. How is the food? Is it demonstrably different than the rest of the park, or is it just you're paying a little more because of the atmosphere?
I would say you're paying a lot more for the atmosphere. And I want to kind of a really, I mean, there's a little bit more, a lot more. And I do think you people accept it because of the experiences that go with it. But what's happened, first of all, the Blue Bayou is probably believed to be, if not among the first themed restaurants in America. So you can imagine when it opened in 1967, people would run. I've read tales of this, run to the restaurant to get their name on the list, right?
Right.
There was no phone reservations or anything. So the food has improved. Chef Andrew Sutton, I am here to praise him up and down. He's probably got a more exalted title than executive chef at Disneyland and the Disneyland resorts, including DCA, Disney California Adventure. His game is so good, he deserves a James Beard Award. So he's in charge of Napa Rose, Carthay Circle, Club 33, and he also revamped the food at the Blue Bayou, and they put a new kitchen in and everything. So I think it actually has improved, and I think I would say it's something that, you know, especially if you're only going to go to Disneyland once a year or twice a year, you have to do it. You have to do it. Just for all it represents to Walt.
Right. So I wonder, I know you can't get in the heads of people at the park, but it does feel like Disney always, there's always the push and pull of maintaining the nostalgia of the park. People have mm-hmm. treasured things that they love about it, but at the same time, times and tastes change.
Sure.
And so they always want to sort of be reflecting what people want while not alienating their core fans who have been coming for decades. So I feel like when they want to do something like revamp the menu, for instance, at the Blue Bayou restaurant, that's the kind of thing that they're up against, that the chef is up against, of people who have their memories of going there when they were a little kid 40 years ago and now bringing their grandkids now. So how much of that goes into the thought process, do you think, at the Disney parks when they are making updates to their menu?
I would think tremendously. I mean, I don't know, as you don't know, I'm not in the heads of Chef Andrew, but I wish I'd asked him that question. That's a really good question. But the things that can't go away are the Monte Cristo. This cannot
sure.
go away at the Blue Bayou, right? So they definitely keep those. One of the day they got the most among the days, I got to be careful, among the days, they got the most complaints at City Hall was around food. And it was in the 90s when the executive chef, not Andrew, changed the corn dog recipe to reflect. Remember when granola was in honey and all that stuff?
Yeah.
You know? So they rolled out. So the batter for the corn dogs at Disneyland is off-the-shelf batter, mixed with water, dip the dog, dip it in oil, boom, you got yourself a corn dog. And so people went to that those few days that they rolled out those corn dogs, people kept saying, where's the corn dog I grew up with? Where's the corn dog I remember? Where's the corn dog I had last week? So you're right. People are very attached to their food memories at
sure.
Disneyland. And so, again, I haven't looked. If I were going to go online and look, I could probably, because I've seen so many of the original Blue Bayou restaurants menus, I could probably see how many things. But I would bet there's a fair amount that remains from 1967, and then
wow.
with, as you said, Derek, you know, bringing in some new things, because it is, it's a classic. You know, the thing is with Disneyland, in my opinion, Walt didn't know there's going to be seven parks. There's actually more than seven if you add each and every one that's at Walt Disney World worldwide. He knew about Walt Disney World, of course. I think he, you know, protecting Disneyland, I think they're doing a good job of keeping But Disneyland is the jewel, the crown jewel,
mm-hmm.
you know, and things that are innovative, things that are changing, they have a lot more freedom to do them in the parks. And one of my, he calls himself my intern, Jim Cora, worked with Walt since 1958, Disney legend, one of my best sources. And, you know, he opened Japan. Now that to me is fascinating, because now let's say that all these men and women have brought Walt's wishes to fruition at Walt Disney World and Epcot. And now it's time to go, well, why don't we build a park somewhere else in the world? But where else in the world do you do it?
Right.
And it was Japan, you know, and Jim Cora built those parks. That's because the Japanese are crazy, crazy, crazy fans of Walt. So they went and they took pictures of everything at Disneyland. And they, so much so that they wanted Tokyo Disney Sea to be almost a replica. And they wanted the signs in English.
Yeah.
Because that's the way they were. But unfortunately, safety signs don't work that way. Keep your hands in the car. They had to put them in Japanese, too. So, you know, I think that I'm very impressed, constantly impressed, 60 years after Walt's gone, more than, you know, how they're able to keep Walt and his vision alive in parks everywhere.
And, well, also, and how strong that, because I think that this was part of the learning experience that Disney has had about opening Disney parks around the world is that I think that initially they thought, oh, other people in other countries are going to want the Disney experience to reflect those countries. And I think that what they have seen instead is, no, we want it to feel like America here. We we're coming to Disney because we want a very specific experience. I remember the first time I went to Disneyland Paris, they had lots of different kinds of food. It felt like they were trying to really sort of emulate more European food styles and everything there. And then the second time I came back, whatever, 4 or 5 years later, it was a lot of ham and cheese pizza. And, you know, and
really
you go to downtown Disney, like right outside Disneyland Paris, and you cannot tell you're not in Orlando. Like, and I do think that they want that this is, you know, this was the feedback that they got, that what the experience that they want is not Disney's take on what it is to be in France. They want a tiny slice of America dropped in the middle of whatever the other country it is.
Right, I agree. And Walt Disney. I mean, I keep saying that because it's Walt Disney. I mean, people are still so fascinated about him, and for great reasons. You know, also, like, food-wise, culturally, of course, they do have to respect that, and they're very careful about that. I've been to Hong Kong, and, you know, in China, the symbol for house has pork in it. I mean, pork is king in China, right?
Right.
So everything in Hong Kong, I haven't been to Shanghai yet, in Hong Kong is like a pork burger. It's like, you know, very pork centric. And also the Chinese have a cultural thing apparently where if there's a line, they go wait in the long line because they think there's something good. So they don't do like we do. If they say, oh, there's a long line at Space Mountain and there's no line at the Haunted Mansion, let's go in the mansion. No, they do the opposite. They like, oh, we need to go in Space Mountain because everybody else's. It must be, you know, the cool place to be right now. So it's just, I'm fascinated about all the things that go into these world parks. I don't know very much about them. I'm like on the team that everybody else is that wants to go to each park. Do you know that somebody did every park, and I met her, and she's an Imagineer. I think she did every single park in the world in a week.
Whoa.
That's too intense.
Oh, God, that would be too much.
We did.
It was a goal.
Yeah, we did the 4 parks in 17 days, I want to say. Oh. We did three or four days in each country, that was a lot. Like, that felt rough as it was. Like, we were pretty exhausted by the time we got to Orlando. Also, the culture shock between going from Paris to Orlando was really something. It's very
different.
When
you know about the castle, like, there's a race on for that one. You know, who can get from castle to castle the fastest. I mean, all these things that I've found talking to fans about what the ways that they do the, I there's another thing. Mother-daughter tattoos is a thing.
Well, no.
I'm not kidding you. Yes, it is. People come up to me and they're like, look, mother-daughter tattoos. My daughter is covered in tattoos and I don't have one, so we don't qualify.
Right. Well, you could always get one.
I might.
Marcy, here's the thing I want to ask you, because we've talked about food, but we haven't talked about drinking. So drinking is available in some of the parks. What are your favorite spots for alcohol in parks?
Well, Club 33.
I will tell you, the bar up there is amazing.
Yeah, are you happy with the update that they did to Club 33?
I'm very happy with the update. I would love to be a member. I'm not a member. I have a lot of friends that are members. I think a giant name drop, Tony Baxter took me to Club 33 when I interviewed him for the book. So that was about as cool as it gets. And then he gave me a handful of fast passes. And he said, I can't ride Indiana Jones with you because I've got to go to this other meeting. All I wanted to do was ride one of Tony Baxter's rides with Tony Baxter in the ride. But I got close to that, just not exactly. But to answer your question, yeah, I think the lounge, that sort of informal experience, is awesome. And then you can go and have, if you want to have, again, Anders Food is so elevated now in Club 33, a really nice, albeit expensive, fixed price in the main dining room. And the alcohol thing, also, I enjoy Carthay Circle so much, you know, and at the Disney California Adventure, they've got great cocktails. And then in the summer, I would say I like to get a strawberry. I don't know if that sounds pansy, but that's me. Strawberry daiquiri. And I like to go sit and go right by Cars Land and drink my, you know, and watch the mountains from that secret entrance into Cars Land behind the pier is, you know, and that kind of food court thing. So instead of going around to the main entrance of Cars Land, you go to the back end with a strawberry daiquiri and you get crunk watching the cars.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
That's
I have to say, from a Disney park perspective, my favorite drink in any Disney park is in, and I hate Epcot as a park, but I do love this about Epcot, is their frozen vodka over near Paris. They have a little stand where you could get like a citrus frozen vodka that is to die for.
Wait, Romaine, what's the beef with Epcot? I'm curious.
I just don't like it. I go to parks to ride. I don't go. I'm not there to eat the food for the most part. And I just find Epcot boring.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I don't find I think that they are trying to make a more concerted effort, you know, putting in the frozen ride. They're trying to give people more of a reason to go to Epcot, you know, with a few more sort of thrilling rides to get people in there. But I agree. Epcot is my most yawn inducing of the parks I've been to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and undergoing a refresh, as you know, and also has the designation of the fastest ride in any park in America is Test Track.
Yeah, which Test Track is a great. Listen, the Test Track is a great ride. I enjoy it a lot. But Epcot is just not my favorite park. It just doesn't. And you know what? Here's the reality. It doesn't have magic for me because I love Disney magic. I love. I just love seeing it in action. I love feeling it. I love being just completely enveloped by it. And I just don't feel like that park has any magic.
Okay, we'll see how the refresh, and we'll have to revisit after they do the refresh and see what you think.
But I will say, that frozen vodka is to die for. I get it every time.
I'm going to go on your recommendation and do it because I haven't had that. I tend to go, I love the Moroccan restaurant. I love the Japanese, you know, gardens and that.
Yeah.
But you're right. I guess you're right. It's just, and I think the Hall of Presidents is pretty darn impressive, except I don't know that I could look at the current president. Ugh, I just.
Yeah. Well,
anyway, I know. But anyway, next.
I think I think that the country pavilions are, I do enjoy the country pavilions. And I actually, you know, since we're talking about food at Disneyland, I do think that the food in the country pavilions is excellent. You know, the French restaurant is a delight. The Japanese restaurant's great. The Moroccan restaurant, like the food, if you're going to go to a park, like if you have, you know, park hopper passes or whatever, and you want to have dinner in a park, my feeling is pick a country, and you almost can't go wrong at a country in Epcot for a real meal. But it's not for me. I agree with Romaine. It's not a wow of a park, but the food is great.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Anyway, that's a whole other discussion because Walt Disney World is in itself. And the only thing I ask to you, my dear friends, Derek and Romaine, please, and your listeners, we only call it Walt Disney World because there would be no Disney World without Walt. And, you know, you watch the movies, what Walt was making to, you know, get everyone excited. He did call it Disney World. He wasn't going to call it Walt Disney World, but after he passed away, Roy made that designation. There would not be a Disney World without Walt, and we'll call it Walt Disney World. And I'll tell you, I have the honor. Everyone in my book, by the way, Eat Like Walt, no exceptions knew Walt. No exceptions. No, my grandmother told me, or my dad said. So I've met with Jim Cora, Marty Sklar, who was brilliant before he passed away, Tony Baxter, who qualifies because he served Walt an ice cream, and, you know, I just met with Orlando Oferrante. So O built, he was the installation guy for Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room, the only attraction at Disneyland with Walt's name, all the way to the Haunted Mansion to Walt Disney World to Japan. So this, you know, but he, the stories when you hear of these men, and they happen to be men, because there's plenty of didn't have access or didn't get to meet them, are, you know, how they were charged with Walt, making sure Walt's vision happened after he passed away. It's just mind-boggling to me. And it kind of circles back to our discussion when we started it and how the parks are keeping a lot of what Walt's wishes would be. And Walt always said the parks would change, and they have. But there's a real spirit, and it really lives and breathes at Disneyland itself, in my opinion, number one, crown jewel.
I agree.
Well, we really appreciate you joining us. It's been a lot of fun talking about food at Disney.
Makes me want a churro real bad.
Yes. But your book is beautiful. It has lots of great photos from the history of the park and old menus and that kind of thing. It's really a delight. So I hope people will check it out. It's not just great tips on places to eat, but also like a rich history of what goes on.
I want to read more about some of these secret menu items. I didn't know so many of them existed.
I think if you probably go on Insta and look at the hashtag, you'll find more than you would ever know. You know,
nice.
Just that, even that hashtag, secret menu item, because people are finding them and they're fun. It's kind of fun to do a secret menu item day, you might be too full for a churro if you did that, but it would be a food adventure.
I'm all right with a food adventure.
Yeah, she'll make it happen.
All right, guys.
Thanks for being
Thank
with
you
us.
So much for having me on your show.
Thank
you. Bet.
You.
Anytime.
Awesome.
All right.
Talk soon. Okay,
right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Our thanks to Marcy Smothers for being with us. Her book is Eat Like Walt, The Wonderful World of Disney Food. It's available now on Amazon and everywhere fine books are sold. It's a beautiful hardcover book, lots of great pictures, and the original drawings of some of the restaurants. It's really a delight. I know many of you spend time going to Disney parks. Disneyland, honestly, is the best. So pick up a copy, and you'll enjoy it for yourself.